The Yeshiva Gedolah of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Thank you, my dear friend Nati. Yeah. Those at the head table, Nati and Marilyn, my very, very dear Rebbetzin, Choshev HaRabonim, and their Rebbetzins, ladies and gentlemen. 18 women who have changed the course of history. This evening we're not going to discuss the somewhat worn-out topic of the equality of women to men. That is, if men can be CEOs of large corporations, or mayors, or governors, or prime ministers, or presidents, or commanders of aircraft carriers, so can women be. Rather, we're going to discuss this evening the astonishing fact how much the Almighty and His Torah has relied and does rely on women in the so-called man's world, either through their paramount and critical roles of wife and mother, or beyond the scope of these roles, to change the course of world history and to bring our nation to its ultimate destiny. The number 18 was selected at random. There are many more. It was selected because it's a nice number, and also there's not time this evening to speak about more. I only hope I'll be able to speak about all of these 18 in the time allocated. Some 3,500 years ago, the Rambam writes, the world was made up of virtually 100% idolaters. One man, and one man alone, changed this. A man of enormous courage and determination, of gigantic mind and spirit, Avraham Avinu, Abraham, our father. He was called Ivri, because the entire world was on one side and he was on the other. When the Almighty created the world and he said, Vayi or, let there be light, he was referring to the spiritual, to the physical light, but also to a spiritual light that would come 2,000 years later, Abraham. Abraham needed a wife to match his stature. And that was Sarah Imenu, Sarah our matriarch. She had also come from an idolatrous family like himself. But she was more than just a wife. She was a full-fledged partner in his work. The sages tell us, the Rambam, that Abraham went and taught the Almighty, the mitzvahs, the commandments to tens of thousands of followers. As HaNefesh Asher Osu Bechorom, Abraham taught the men, he was a Rosh Hashiva, and Sarah taught thousands of women. She also was a Rosh Hashivata. She rose to her own heights, where the Almighty said, your name shall no longer be Sarai, which means a queen to Abraham, but Sarah, you will be a queen for the entire world. She brought into the world and groomed him, Yitzchak, Isaac, who was to become the second pillar of the world, and the successor of Abraham. She gave him special love and guidance, where the Torah tells us that he was never comforted from his mother's loss until he was married to his spouse. But she did more than that also. The Torah teaches that Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, his acts with her son, Isaac. Vatomel Avram, and she said, Goresho Oma Azes Vesbono, chase out the maidservant and her son, Gilo Yirash Ben Oma Azes im Beni im Yitzchok. He will not inherit. He will not be your successor. Bayera Hadover Meod Beene Avraham. And these were evil words to Avraham. How can I chase out my son? How can I disinherit him? How can I? He is the firstborn. Vayem Elokim el Avraham, and Hashem came to Avraham and said, Al yeda b'einecha lanar v'alamosecha. Do not worry about this. Kol asher teimar eilecha sora shema b'kola, ki b'yitzkok yikor eilecha zera. You listen to Sora. She is seeing more than you're seeing. Because he will not be your successor, but Yitzchok will be, the son that comes from both of you. We have to give a minute of insight into this. The nations of Yishmael are the Arab kingdoms. Today they are the Muslim empire. Avraham wanted these people to be the rightful heirs in place of Israel. Would have been a different world. Sora resisted this, and she intervened that the inheritance would go through her son Yitzchak. Then we go, Yitzchak, he needed a spouse and someone also like him. And Rivka was chosen. She also was from a family of idolaters and evil people. She was chosen through the great act of her chesed with Eliezer by the well. She gave birth to Yaakov Ishtam, Jacob, who was known as the most perfect man in the world. Tzurosei Choko Kalkisei HaKovet. His image is hewed out on the throne of the Almighty. It would have been satisfactory if this would have been the greatness of Rivka. But there was more, much more. The Torah relates that there was another son, Esav. Vayav Yitzchok es Esav. And Yitzchok loved Esav. But Rivka saw the greatness of Yaakov, of Jacob, not of Esav. And then Rivka heard Yitzchok speaking to Esav, saying, go and bring me from your hunting, so I may eat and I may give you the brachas, the blessings that the inheritance will follow. And she called Yaakov, Vatov v'nish mabikeli, my son, listen to me, asher ani metzava osoch, which I command you. You go and you bring your father matamim, good things to eat. Bavur asher yivarechacha, in order that he should bless you before your death. And Yaakov said, but how can I do this? It's not my father's will. She said, you go. But he will find out. I will take responsibility. Akshma bikoli, listen to my voice. Again, we find here where the world was saved. By this woman, because from Esav was to come Amalek, was to come the Roman Empire, was to come the Nazis, Yimach Shemon, our greatest arch enemies. Yitzchak had planned that the chain of succession would go to Esav. It was Rivka that intervened, not only saved the day, but save the world. Then we come to Yaakov, this perfect man, and his first wife, Leah. Leah was not destined to become the wife of Yaakov. She was destined to become the wife of Esav. They would say, Shnei Bonim LeYitzchok, Shtei Bonis LeLovin. Yitzchok had two sons, and Lovin had two daughters. And the older son, Esav, he will marry the oldest daughter, Leah. And the younger son, Yaakov, he will marry Rachel. But Leah changed her destiny. She did not cease from appealing to the Almighty with all of her heart and all of her strength that she should not fall into the lot of Esav. Until finally the Almighty listened to her and let her become the wife of Yaakov Avinu of Jacob. What did she do by changing this destiny? Asher mishtei hen bonu es beis Yisrael. She became one of the builders of the house of Israel. Not only that, but she brought in six of the shiftei kor, six of the sons of the 12 sons of Jacob. She brought in Reuven, the firstborn, Shimon. She brought in Levi, who was to become the chosen tribe where the priesthood would come from. Le'olam le'olam Levi aved zora, that never worshipped idolatry. She brought in Yehuda. Lo yosher shevet mi Yehuda, mi beis David ve'elech. From him would come kingship, the house of David. She brought him Yisachar, Chamor Goram, the power of Torah, Mosaim Roshei Sanhedriais, who would produce 200 heads of the courts. She brought in Zebulun, Lechov Yomim Yishkein, who will become the great people of Kamris that will support Torah in Israel. She changed the destiny and built the house of Israel. Then there was Rachel, our matriarch. She was known as Eshes Yaakov. She was the full-fledged wife of Yaakov because the whole reason why he went to work at Lovin was for her. It's a wonder that someone could become a wife of Yaakov Avinu Ishtam, the most perfect man in the world. But she did a lot on her own also. She brought into the Shiftei Kor, into the house of Israel, Yosef HaTzadik, her firstborn, Joseph. Where the sages say that Joseph was the real successor of Yaakov. He was just like him. And he really was capable of giving birth to 12 tribes himself. He was the one who would become the mighty king of Egypt and save the entire house of Israel and gather up all of the wealth of the world. And he was on the Bitzitkai. He taught Israel one of our greatest principles, that wherever there is a Jew, he can fulfill the Torah and mitzvahs. He was in Egypt, a land that was the epitome of promiscuity and Tumah impurity. He was a slave. He was a prisoner in the dungeons of Egypt. And he became a king of Egypt with the enormous wealth of the world. Yet Omde Bitzitkai, his father testified on him, he did not change to the right or to the left from the way I knew him. Then she brought into the house of Israel Binyamin, Chefif Olav Kol Hayom, where the Almighty says, my Shechina will dwell. It was in Binyamin's territory that the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, would rest. And from him would come the kings Saul and Mordechai and Esther. But she did more than this, Rachel. The final redemption, the sages say, will not be because of the merit of a man, but because of the merit of a woman. And that will be Rachel. sages tell us, states as follows. Kol berama nishma, Yirmiyahu lamed aleph. Kodesh Baruch Hu hears a voice in the heavens. Nehi bechi samrudim. Bitter weeping. Rachel mevaka al boneha. Rachel weeps for her children. Me anoli nochem al boneha ki eneno. She refuses to accept comfort because her children are not here. Ke amar Hashem. The Almighty says, Mini kolech mi bechi ve'enayech mi dima. Rachel, stop your crying, hold back your tears. Ki yeshocha lefulaseich, because of your great deeds, there will be a reward. Shavu me'eretz oyev, your sons will return from the lands of their enemy. Ve yesh tikva lachriseich num Hashem v'sham shavu bonim legvulam, they will return to their boundaries. Why is this? Because Yaakov, when he buried Rachel al aderech, outside of Ephros, why didn't he go into the city to bury her? Because he was told, no, she will be the one that will bring back the people to the land of Eretz Yisrael. Because she is the unifying force. She is the foundation of the house. The Akeres Habayis is the anchor. She will bring them all back. And further, she will get up to the Almighty and say, why are you angry at your sons? Because they betrayed you. They went after other gods. Didn't my sister betray me and took my husband away from me? And yet I forgave her. And the Almighty will say, Yeshocha lefulaseich, you are right. It will be in your merit that I will bring the children back. So this is Rachel, the fifth woman, Dina. Dina did not change the course of history, but she was capable of changing the course of history like it was never changed before, but was prevented from doing so, but not through a fault of hers. When Yaakov confronted Esav after the many years at Lavan's house, he concealed Dina in a box. He says, lest this wicked brother will cast his eyes on the beautiful Dina and take her for a wife. Very good intentions. But Yaakov was punished for that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pointed a finger at him. And he said, Mono chesed me'ochiv, you have withheld kindliness from your brother. Shoyse yechol lahaksir lamutov, had you let her marry your brother Esav, she would have made a tzaddik out of him, a righteous man. Kama niflah maimazu, how wondrous this statement is. A man has a right and a responsibility to see his daughter gets a good shidduch. Who would want a shidduch with Esav? Firstly, we see that Dina had that capability. Otherwise, the Almighty, I mean, he's not talking, he's talking sense. So Dina had the capability of taking the world's greatest wicked man and making a righteous man out of him. That tells the Rosh Yeshivas used to thunder at this statement. I remember the Ramot Chai Katz, one of my great rabbeim who lived through the Holocaust, but his wife and 10 children did not. He says, do you know what the world would have been if there would have been an Esav HaTzadik and not Esav HaRosho? There would have been no Amalek, no Romans. There would have been no korbanos, no destructions of the Bate Mikdoshes. There would have been no Holocaust. But how did Yaakov know? He must have known. But he was cautious. And then there was thunder. A risk you take in business. A gamble you do for yourself. When it comes to yourself, you're even prepared to move to anywhere and to send your children out to war. But not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it comes to gamble, he would say, Madam Nemana gamble. When it comes to gamble or risk for the Almighty, people will say, no, I can't go there. My children come first. I can't invest in this. It's too risky. And this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu pointed at Yaakov. The great Yaakov. You didn't take a risk for me. You could have changed the entire world. Evidently, Dina had enormous powers. Then there was Yocheved, the daughter of Levi. She was the wife of Amram. Amram Godel Hador Hoyo. During the time when we were enslaved in Egypt, Amram was the leader of the generation. It would have sufficed if she was his wife, and that's it. But she gave birth to who? To Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. One woman can give birth to such three giants. And she groomed them all for leadership. And all of this was during some of the darkest days of our history. When we were suffering from over 100 years of slavery, over 80 years of affliction in a land that was not ours. But she did more than that also. The mighty Paro, he decreed, Im bein hu v'amiten oisoi, if it's a son, you must kill them. He said this to the midwives. And Yocheved was the head of the midwives. Vatirena hamyaldeis es Hashem b'leosaka asher divar alein melech Mitzrayim. They feared the Almighty. And they did not do what Paro decreed. Vat chayon es hayelodim. And they gave life to all of the children. She defied the mighty monarch and tyrant Paro, which could have easily cost her life. And it was through this merit that the generation of the desert, of the Egypt, was allowed to go out. Then there was her daughter Miriam, the oldest daughter, the oldest sister of Aaron and Moshe. She was a partner with her mother, Shifra and Pua, Yocheved and Miriam, in bringing life to all the children. But she did more than that. When the decree came out, Amram separated himself from Yocheved. They said, why should we remain married and have children only to have them killed? And she said no. She stood up against her parents. And she said, your decree is harsher than Paro's, because he's only decreed against the sons, and you are even against the daughters. So they came back together, and they gave birth to Moshe, the great leader of Israel, the one who would bring the Torah down, the one who would lead us to the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. More than that, when Moshe was born, and he was concealed in the Nile River, she went to stand by to watch him. This was against the law, against the decree. If she was found, she would be put to death. And she was one of the Goalim. The Almighty said, I send you Moshe and Aaron and Miriam to take you out of Egypt. And even more, for 40 years in the desert, we had water through the merit of Miriam. Number 8, Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro. Vatered Bas Paro lirchaitz ala yor vatiftach vatireo es hayeled. The daughter of the mighty Paro, the princess of Egypt, she went to bathe in the river with her maidservants, And she saw the basket and she opened it up. And there was a child. She had compassion on it. And she said, this is from the Hebrews. She took it. Her maidservant said, you are going against the decree of your father. She refused to listen. She defied her father. Not only did she save the child, she adopted the child. She took him into the palace as her own child. How she got this by her father, I don't know. She named him. The name Moshe comes from the daughter of Parai. Moshe had other names. He had a name Tov and Tuvia, other names. The Medrash tells us, she would hug it and kiss it and carry it around like it was her own son. She wouldn't allow the son to go out of the palace of the king. And he was so beautiful that anyone who cast his eyes on him could not take it off. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you called him Moshe. His name shall be Moshe. The Medrash says, Mikan atolomat schorin shel gem lechasodim. From here we see the great reward of those who do chesed, of kindliness. Harbe shem esoyalei. He had many names. But even the Almighty would only call Moshe by the name that the daughter of Parai gave to him. Her name became Bishon. In Ashkenazic it's pronounced Bishon. In Sephardit it's pronounced Bichon. In the Divrei Hayomim it states, Ve'ele v'nei Bishon bas Parai asher lokach morad. Bishon, the daughter of Parai, married Morad. Who was Mered? Mered was Kolev ben Yefune. The great Kolev was called Mered because he rebelled against the Maraglim, the spies. How did she marry him? She was Megayeret. She converted. And she went out of Egypt as his wife. Then it states, where did she get her name Bishon? Bishon means Bas Hashem, the daughter of Hashem. The Almighty said, you named my son Moshe. You gave him his name. I will give you my name. You took him as a son. I will take you as my daughter. And then it states, she gave birth to many children. Yered, Hever. Now the sages say this was all Moshe. Because what she did for him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu considered that was her son. Bas Parai, Moshe Rabbeinu. Then there was Tzipora. Tzipora became the Zugase, the wife, the spouse of this Moshe Rabbeinu. Lokom novi obi Yisrael kemoshe. There was never another prophet like Moshe. Asher yodei Hashem ponim el ponim. That knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu face to face. Lechol ha'eses v'hameifsim asher shloche Hashem la'aseis be'eretz l'hu. Executed all of the wonders against the mighty tyrant Parai. She became his wife. Why was she called Tzipora? Because when Yisrael said, why have you, the seven daughters, come back so quickly? And they said, well, there was some Egyptian by the well, and he helped us, and he chased away all of our tormentors. She said, well, why? He said, why did you leave him there? Go, fetch him. She, Tzipora, of the seven daughters, ran like a tzipora, like a bird flies, to fetch Moshe. The Medrash tells us there was a discrepancy because Moshe left as a young man and he didn't return to Egypt until he was 80. What happened to all of those years? It states that, according to some, Moshe was in the dungeon for many, many years. And it was Tzipora that kept him alive, brought him food and drink. And again she saved his life, when they were traveling to Egypt, and they lodged, the serpent came to swallow up Moshe. And this was a punishment because they had not circumcised their son. And she saved them. So here, we have no greater performance than Moshe did in Egypt, in Har Sinai. And his life was saved by Tzipporah. Actually, if we look into it, we see that Moshe's life was saved by four women. Firstly, by Yocheved, like we mentioned. Then by Miriam, like we mentioned. Then by the daughter of Parai. And then by Tzipporah. We'll go to another one. Now, actually, these were the women in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. We could count these as 600,000, because there were 600,000 men between 20 and 60, so they were all married. These were the 600,000 wives, but we'll count them only as one. The Chazal, the sages say, Leves Husan Noshim Nigola, Onami Mitzrayim. We did not be redeemed from Egypt because of the merit of the men. Bezchus Hanoshim, we were redeemed from Egypt because of the merit of the women. And there were three reasons on this in Egypt. Firstly, all of the nations would say, the children of Israel are not pure. They all have Egyptian blood in them. If the Egyptians ruled over them physically, over the men, they certainly ruled over the wives also. The Almighty says, not so. For 210 years, the women remained dedicated and faithful to their husbands and only to their husbands. There was one act of promiscuity that the Torah relates in order to teach us this was the only act in 210 years when we were enslaved to those animalistic people. And even that act was through an error. Then, the Torah relates further that not only did they take care of their husbands with food and drink, but they also mended their broken spirits from the slave labor that was imposed on them. The Torah tells us that B'nai Yisrael, the daughters of Israel, when it came time to build the sanctuary, they had copper mirrors, which they used to beautify themselves. And when Moshe needed copper, they brought this for the sanctuary. Moshe rejected it. He said, it's for the Yetzer Hara. This is made for vanity. How can I use it in the sanctuary, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's home? Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kabel, take it. This is more precious to me than all of the gold and the silver and the precious jewels that the others are bringing. Because it was through this that they raised the spirits of the men. When the men were so broken, they would come and they would bring food and drink to them. And they would nourish them and revive them. And then they would show them the mirrors. And they would say, Reya atzmim bala b'mara mishad lose b'dvorim ani noya mimeko. Look in the mirror to see how much more beautiful I am than you are. And they would arouse their husband's interest. And through this, the generation of Egypt that would go out was born. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, said, take these mirrors and put them in the sanctuary. Again, when it came to the splitting of the sea, it states the men sang and the women sang to praise the great miracle. But there was a distinction. The men just sang. The women sang and danced with musical instrument. Bitupim ubim chayles. And the sages ask, where did they get the musical instruments? In the middle there of the desert by the sea. The righteous women knew that there would be a great miracle And they prepared themselves by bringing these instruments with them. And it was this, through the merit of this trust, that the Almighty said, I will take you out. These were the women in Egypt. What about these women in the desert? When they came to the mountain of Sinai to receive the Torah, it states that the Almighty commanded Moshe, Kol somar lebeis Yaakov v'saged libnei Yisrael. This is what you shall say to the house of Yaakov, and this is what you should tell the sons of Israel. The house of Yaakov, the house of Jacob, Zuhanoshim, these are the women. Bnei Yisrael, these are the men. The Maharal of Prague asks, why the women first? Good. Two sections, but why the women first? He said, because the women were first when it came to taking the Torah, receiving the Torah, and saying Nashem and Nishma. They were the first. And the Almighty knew that. Therefore he gave Moshe a good etzah. He says, don't take the Torah first to the men. The liable will give you a hard time and they'll throw cold water on everything. First, take it to the women. And they'll accept it with both hands. Then take it to the men. This was the great schus of Nase the Nishma, the unequivocal acceptance of the Almighty's Torah. Then further, on the 40th day after the receiving of the Torah, when Moshe was on Mount Sinai, there was the great tragedy of the golden calf. Israel went and they made themselves an idol. This was a betrayal to the Almighty, but more than that. The sages say this was a betrayal of a kala b'seichu posa, like a bride that betrays her chosen on the wedding day. The Almighty became so angry that finally when he forgave the people, he said, but there'll never be a punishment that will come on Israel throughout all of history that will not also include a punishment for this golden calf that you betrayed me with. What was the women's position in the golden calf? It states every tribe was involved with the exception of the tribe of Levi. Men. The women refused to have anything to do with the golden calf. The men came to ask for their jewelry. They refused to give it. And then again, what sealed the decree of the generation of the desert that they would wander for 40 years and die and only their children would go into Israel was the hate, the sin of the spies. The spies came, they slandered the land and they said, let us make a new leader and let us go back to Egypt. The Almighty said, you will not go into Israel. This took place on the night of Tisha B'Av. Sages say because of that, this created the chain of events of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Golus, destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which was on Tisha B'Av, and the long Golus exile that we're in now. The women did not say, let us go back to Egypt. They said, Tinu lano achuza, we want our inheritance in Israel. Shoyu machavavois eso oretz. To them, they wanted Eretz Israel. It was very, very dear to them. When it came time at the end of the 40 years to go into Eretz Israel, states there was no man alive that was from that generation. It was a new generation. Without one or two or three exceptions, or Shevet Levi. But women were all there. So here we see, and we're counting this only as one, that they created the merit for us to go out of Egypt, for us to endure the desert, and to receive the Torah. We go to another one. This is number 11, Rus. Taylor Bain, Ruth gave birth to a son, and she called him Obed, the father of Yishai, the father of David. Who was Ruth? She was the daughter of Eglon, the mighty king of Moab. She was a princess of a mighty nation. She left, forsook the palace of the king, all of this honor and glory, her father and mother and family, her nation, the wealth, and she came to a strange land together with an old mother-in-law, Mechusar Lechem, where they had not even bread to eat, but they had to go beg in the farms. For what reason? Lachasa istachas kanfei ashkino, because she wanted to join HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nation. What did she bring with her? She brought with her a gift that changed the history of the world forever. She brought the soul of King David. Today in Hallel, and again tomorrow morning, we say, Ono Hashem, ki ani avdecho, ani avdecho ben amosecho, pitachta lemesoroi. Help me, Hashem, David said, because I am your servant. I am the servant, the son of your maidservant. Sages say the maidservant was Ruth. You have unlocked my chains. My soul was locked up by the hated nation of Moab. It had to come to Israel. Ruth was the one who brought it. With that soul, she brought the empire of David HaMelech, the empire of King Solomon, and the empire of the Melech HaMashiach that will come and rectify and perfect the entire world. This is why she is called Imo Shel Malchus, the mother of kingship. We have another two women, Devorah and Yael. Devorah was a Nevi'ah, Isha Nevi'ah prophetess, Ashes Lapidos. She was the wife of Lapidos. What does this mean? The commentaries say a lapid is a fire, a flame. Ashes Chayel Zrizo b'maaseo k'lapid Ash. She was a live fire. Hishof Te'esh Yisrael. She was so wise, she was able to judge Israel. She would sit under the Toma Devora, the date tree, and they would come up to her for Mishpat. At that time, because of the Averis of Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the king of Canaan, Yobin, and his commander-in-chief, Sisro, to afflict Klal Yisrael for 20 years. 20 years is a long time. The Second World War was only 5 or 6 years. And they had 900 iron chariots. In other words, a force of 900 tanks. Then the Almighty told Devorah, now's your chance. She called to Barak. Some say that was her husband. From Naphtali, he says, now's the chance. Go and fight against them, and you will annihilate them. And he said, I will go, but not alone, only if you come with me. She said, it's not the way for a woman to go and lead the forces into battle. I'll come with you, but then the glory of victory will not be yours. It will be in the hands of another woman. He went and he annihilated Sisro's forces. Sisro jumped off his tank. He ran for cover, and Yael Eshes Hever Akeni, a woman by the name of Yael, she said, come, Adoni Sureilai, come to me. I will save you. And she concealed him in the tent. Then, when he was sleeping, she took the tent spike and she drove it into his head and killed him. And when Barak Barak was Radif. He was looking for Sisera. She went out and she said, "Come, and I will show you Va'areich Esoish Asher Aton Mevakesh. I will show you the man you are looking for." Va'tishkei Toretz Arbaim Shona. This brought 40 years of peace to Eretz Yisrael. The world hasn't known the 40 years of peace for a long, long many years. A lifetime of peace these two women brought. Then there was Hannah, the mother of Shmuel Anobi of Samuel. She was a bitter woman because she had no child. She appealed to the Almighty. She cried and wept. And she said that, if you, my Lord, will see my bitterness, and you will remember me, and you will give me seed, I will dedicate him all of his life to the sanctuary. And Shmuel, Samuel, was born. Shmuel became the greatest prophet we ever had, next to Moshe Rabbeinu. There's one statement in the sage that says he was just about as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. And what did he do? He went and he was the one who coronated Shaul, King Saul. And he coronated David. But more than that, Hannah did. The Gemara tells us the greatest power the Klal Yisrael has is Torah u'tfilah. Torah and prayer. Hakol kol Yaakov. This is the voice of Yaakov. The Gemara says, Omer Abab Nuna kame hilchasa givirta ikala mishma mehani kroi. How many great laws of tefillah, how we should pray, can we learn from this woman, Hannah? It states, medaberes al libo. She was crying, she was praying with heart. Mikan ispaltsoch shechaven libo. From here we learn that when you daven to Hashem, it has to be with lev, with heart. Sfoseho naos. Her lips were moving. From here we learn that even though no sound was coming, you have to enunciate and verbalize the words. Bekola la yishama. No sound was coming. Shosalak bia kola bitfilosa. From here we learn you're not supposed to shout or raise your voice. And Eli the priest, when he saw that, he thought she was a shikora. He thought that she was drunk with wine. And he said, how long would you pursue your wine? From here we learn that one who has drunk wine is not allowed to daven. Then, number 15, Esther Hamalka. The Almighty said, Anochi haste Esther esponai bayemahu. Darkest day in Jewish history was the time of Purim. The Almighty said that I will conceal my light from you. There was only one time in all of the history of the world when every Jew in the world was confronted with an immediate death. This was during the time of Haman and Ahasuerus. Lahashmid lahare galaabir is kol ha'yehudi minar v'atzokin tafenoshim b'yom echor u'shlolom lavais. To destroy every Jew, man, woman, and child on one day. All of the Jews of the world, because Ahasuerus was the king of the entire world. Esther said, go and tell the Jews, fast for me for 3 days and three nights. And I and my maidservants will also fast for 3 days and three nights. And then I will go to the king and I will devise a strategy and a plan to save all of the Jews of the world. Imagine if this would have worked. And it worked. And King Solomon writes in Mishle, Chochma is bonsa beso. With wisdom did she build her house. Chochmas noshim bonsa beso la'olam. It was the wisdom of this woman that built the house of Israel forever. This is what King Solomon writes, Zu Esther Amalka. A woman saved all of the Jews in the world on their darkest day. Then there was Yehudis at the time of the Greek oppression, where they wanted to la'avira mechukere miteresecho, mechukere tzeinecho, to take our Torah away from us. The sages say it was Yehudis that inspired the rebellion. She got up and she said, why don't you do something, especially the hegemon, the governor, what wanted to commit acts of promiscuity with every color. And she got up and she rebuked her brothers. You sit silent, you don't do anything. And she spurred them on to the rebellion. And then she herself killed the commander-in-chief. It's very interesting that the great Rashbam, one of the Balei Tosfos, we have three Yom Tovim, Pesach with four cases of four cups of wine, Purim with the Megillah, and Hanukkah with the candles, and these are all positive commandments that are governed, limited by time, and women generally are free from these commandments. The Gemara says on these three, they are obligated, she'atein oyu b'ishenes, because they were also in the miracle. The Rashbam says they were not also in the miracle. He says they made the miracle. He says on Pesach, it was b'shus nashim tzitkonios, it was in their merit, like we said. Purim, it was Esther. Hanukkah, it was Yehudis. They made the miracle. Now, we have two more left. Perhaps you'll say, well, this was biblical times. Women were different. Today, they're not so much. Now, not only biblical times. We have post-biblical times also. We find there was a certain man in the time of the Mishnah who was an enigma. He came from a family of converts. He was an ignoramus until 40 years old. Lekorav leishono, he never learned how to read the Chumash or Mishnah, and he testified on himself that he hated the Rabbonim and the Talmidei Chachomim. Ushmei Akiva ben Yosef. This is Akiva, the son of Yosef. He was a herdsman. From the other aspect, why is it an enigma? Because ultimately he rose to such heights and he contributed so much light of Torah to Klal Yisrael that there is almost no equal of all of the sages, with the exception perhaps of Hillel HaZokein or of Yehuda HaNosi. Dalet Niknasu L'Pardes, four wanted to go into the orchard of the secrets of the Torah, to find the greatest and the deepest hidden secrets of the entire Torah. A tragedy happened to three of the four, even they were all great sages. But the Rabbi Kiva, Nichnas B'Sholem V'Yotza B'Sholem. He entered into the orchards with peace and he came out peacefully. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to receive the Torah, he asked the Almighty, what are these funny strokes on the letters of the on the tops of the letters? And the Almighty said, these are crowns, tagim. And he said, what are they for? He says, it's not for you. Well, then who is it for? He says, later generations there will be a herdsman who will grow into a great sage, and his name is Akiva ben Yosef, and he will learn the entire Torah. And he'll need something else to learn. Therefore, I wrote these crowns on the letters. And Moshe said, well, why are you giving me the Torah? Give it to him. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, shteik, be silent. Kach ola b'makshavti. This is my decree. And this was Rabbi Kiva. And when Rabbi Kiva died, the Mishnah tells us, botul kovod ha-Torah, the world fell from honor of Torah. Because there was no one that honored the Torah like him, where he gave his life to understand every stroke of the pen. that was written in the Torah. Now we have this herdsman, this ignoramus, knows who Shabbos, comes from a simple background, and he goes up to those heights. How was that possible? He tells us how that's possible. It was his wife, Rachel. Rachel was the daughter of Kalba Shavua, Echad Me'atirei Yushalayim, one of the great philanthropists of Yushalayim. And when she said that she wants to marry Akiva, he became so angry, he disinherited her. He drove her out of the house. And she defied her father because she saw the potential greatness in him. And she told Akiva, I will marry you on the condition that you will go and learn in Yeshiva. And this he did. Many, many years later, when he became so great that his name was known throughout the whole world, he returned one day after 24 years in the yeshiva with 24,000 disciples. And she ran up to meet him. She was in rags because she was disinherited. And all of his shamoshim and his gaboyim wanted to chase her away. He said, no. Shali ushalachem shalohi. What is mine and what is yours, the 24,000 Talmidim, says that belongs to her. This was a woman in post-biblical times. Now we're up to number 18. Perhaps you will say, well, that was in the time of the sages. What about modern times? Modern women are different. All right, we'll take a modern woman. About 40 years ago, there was a bris mila in Eretz Yisrael in which Rabbi Cheskel Sarna, the Chevron Rosh Yeshiva, was there. And the child that was being circumcised was the grandson of Rav Moshe Chevroni and also the grandson of the Ger Rebbe. And a large segment of Eretz Yisrael Torah giants were there. Amongst them, the grandchildren of the following leaders of the previous generation, the Chofetz Chaim's grandchildren, the Slonovar Rebbe's grandchildren, Vishnitzer Rebbe, Ger Rebbe, Lavush Mordechai, Alter Nevadik, Alter Mir, Alter Slobotka, they were all at the bris. Rabbi Cheskel Sarna got up to speak. This story is being written by, this capitulation is being written by Rabbi Noach Weinberg, founder and dean of Eish HaTorah. He said that Rabbi Cheskel Sarna said, everybody in this room thinks that it was his grandfather that did the most for Klal Yisrael in the last 100 years. Chofetz Chaim, the Nevadika, the Slobotka, with the shivas, yeshivas, and the Hasidim, and so on. He said it was none of them. They didn't do the most for Klal Yisrael. He said people were getting a little edgy because there were Hasidim there and Mishnagdim there and in and a hair. And they said, look, it's a simcha, let's not get into politics. Now, he says, now. He says, I'll tell you even more. He says, it was not one of your grandfathers that did the most for Klal Yisrael in the last 100 years. And the one that did never even learned one daf, one blot, one page of Gemara. Now they're saying, you're going too far. Going too far, what do you have to spoil such a wonderful simcha for? And he said, I'll tell you more. When I mention the name, you will all agree that they said it's impossible. Chassidim, Misnagdim. He mentioned the name. It was not a man, it was a woman. The name was Sora Schneer. If it wasn't for her, he said, who never learned a blot Gemara, never even had a formal Jewish education, what would Klal Yisrael look like today? What did she do? She did something so radical in Poland. And this was in the 1900s, 1920, which was less than 100 years ago. She did something so radical that many wanted to put her in harem, to excommunicate her, but she wasn't interested. In Poland, where there were 3 or 4 million Jews living, there was no such thing as education, Jewish education for girls. Girls were supposed to get their education at home. Because of that, Jewish girls were being lost. She decided she's going to start a school for girls and then have these girls go out and start other schools, and maybe they could create a network of schools throughout Poland and save the girls, because they were getting wiped out with the Great Assimilation. And she called her school by the name of Beis Yaakov, from the posuk, Kol Somar le Beis Yaakov, this is what you shall tell the house of Jacob, Zu Anoshim, these are the women. The story is told that they went to the Chofetz Chaim to stop her. When he heard the story, he ran into his room. They thought he was getting ready to go to battle. He came out with money and said, "Such a great mitzvah, and I want a part of it." And he gave her the money. And the Ger Rebbe and the Belzer Rebbe backed her. What did she achieve that was so great? Her first class opened in Poland in 1918 with 25 students. 5 years later, in 1923, it was a network of 7 schools, over 1,000 students. In 1933, 2 years before she died, the network had grown to 265 schools with close to 40,000 students. One woman, never learned a page of Gemara, never had a formal Jewish education, to do something and to defy public opinion. Close to 40,000 students, 265 schools, and this is what Rabbi Cheskel Sarna was saying, you'll all agree with me. This created the basis of education for girls. This was in our century. These are a few words, each, about 18 women who have changed the course of history. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.